This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. The Supreme Court decided at least for the next few days, many women will still be able to get the widely used abortion pill mifepristone. But in some states, CBS's Steve Futterman tells us it is getting tougher and tougher.
With strict new abortion laws in effect in southern states, women are finding it more difficult to terminate pregnancies.
We know in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, there's no access. Georgia also has a six-week fetal cardiac activity ban.
Stephanie Frame is with Planned Parenthood in Florida, another restrictive state. Her group is fighting back.
We are working with a patient navigation system.
They are using individuals called navigators to help women in these states find ways to get legal abortions.
Help patients find an appointment somewhere else in the United States.
Steve Futterman, CBS News.
A 21-year-old Air National Guardsman was officially charged with violating the Espionage Act for removing and transmitting classified materials. Our Wendy Gillette with details.
Texera is accused of bringing top secret documents home from the base where he served as a Massachusetts Air National Guardsman, photographing them and then posting them in a gaming chat room on the social platform Discord starting late last year.
He was in court but didn't enter a plea. He'll be back in court on Wednesday. A campaign event in a western port city of Japan turned chaotic after an explosion when the prime minister was just about to speak. BBC correspondent Shema Khalil.
A witness told local media that they saw a person throwing something and then saw smoke rise. Another witness said she heard a big bang. The prime minister left the scene unhurt and no other injuries have been reported.
And police do have a suspect in custody. One of the biggest questions President Biden is getting hammered with lately, will he be running for re-election in 2024?
I told you my plan is to run again.
He just hasn't made the official announcement yet. We do know now that former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo won't be running in 2024. He said choosing not to was a deeply personal decision for him and his wife. Pompeo claimed Donald Trump did not factor into his decision. Well, this may be tough for teens. TikTok could soon be banned in Montana. Correspondent Catherine Herrich with details.
Montana has become the first state to pass legislation banning TikTok statewide. Lawmakers in the state's GOP-led House passed the bill Friday in a 54-43 vote. It now goes to Governor Greg Gianforte's for approval. If the bill becomes law, the Chinese-owned app would be prohibited from operating in that state and no longer be offered on the app stores.
This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation related, and Brewing says it's badly needed as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water, or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rowe says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio, streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kristen.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. I have been waiting for this show for weeks. Today we are joined by Governor Tony Evers and Nicole Goebel from the national organization Caregivers Action Network. Joining us first is Governor Tony Evers. Governor, thank you so much for being with us today. Kristen and I started the show because we're both family caregivers to young adults with autism and intellectual disabilities. I'll let Kristen tell her story, but for me, I was a caregiver for my son, which had been one of the most, or is, I should say, one of the most special relationships that I think I've had with another human being, and one of the most gratifying, to be honest. But there definitely has been some areas in my life which being a caregiver has taken its toll. For me, one is the impact that it's had on my overall mental health. There has been some periods, my son is now going soon to be 20, but there's been some periods that I did go through some pretty severe depression and anxiety while caring for him. And then there is also the fact that because I spent most of my days caring for my son, I wasn't working, which resulted in me not paying into Social Security or my other retirement plans. So it leaves some financial uncertainty for our future, at least going forward. How about you, Nicole?
Right.
Or Kristen?
Right. And Governor, we wanted you, we know you've been listening to stories of family caregivers all over the state for quite a while. And I actually participated in one of your listening sessions when you were getting the budget proposal organized. And I was really struck by how responsive you were and your staff was and how many people really had common situations to me. My daughter, Nicole, is 21, and she has autism, epilepsy, and an intellectual disability. And as Liza said, the relationship is really special. I know the universe gave her to me because I needed to learn patience desperately, and she has been testing me on that every day since she's been here. And I also struggled with some physical and mental health challenges that had to take a backseat to her. And then from a professional standpoint, I have been privileged to be one of the MMSD, Madison School District public school teachers since 2000, but I've had to retire early because there's no one to work for Nicole. And so I have to be that family caregiver. I have to fill that gap. And so, you know, we are both so grateful for all the things that you've put into your budget proposal to support family caregivers. It's clear you've been listening to people like us. We believe that you are really a champion on this issue. So my first question for you is why? Why do you feel it's so important to support family caregivers?
Well, there's two good examples.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, and you know, everybody deserves to receive quality, compassionate care, especially when folks are at some really vulnerable points of their life. So that's what we want for our parents, our grandparents, kids, you know, whatever. If they need that kind of support, and that's what we would want for ourselves. So I know that. That you know as well as I do that we're facing a caregiver of crisis in our state, and I think it's really evident. As you know, I've traveled around the state talking to caregivers or doing events like this, and our state population is going to be different than it has been in the past. Our population of folks 65 and older, which includes yours truly, expected to grow by 72% between 2050 and 2040. That's six times higher than the overall Wisconsin population growth of 12% during that same period. So, you know, as a result of that, the demand for long-term care services obviously are going to increase. But also the not only the demand, but that is why, you know, the demand exists now. It's going to obviously increase. So we have to invest in a strong, stable, long-term care system. And most of all, why we have to invest in the workforce that makes that care possible, including sure. family caregivers. At the end of the day, we're always going to need caregiving. So supporting the needs of caregivers is critical for our present and our future needs as a state. And, supporting is, yes, but, I heard you talk about, within the two of you talking about your stories. It's not just a financial thing. We also need to make sure that access to behavioral mental health for caregivers is an important part of our way that we provide help for caregivers and obviously the people that are in their care.
Yes. 80% of all people needing care are given that care by unpaid family caregivers. And we see the results of that with Kristen's story, right? The school district lost an excellent teacher because there was no one to care for her daughter. So she had to step aside and do that. So my question for you are, what are your thoughts on how we can best combat the paid caregiver or direct care provider crisis?
Yeah, well, we have to pay them more and pay them more if they are in a situation that they're paid. So I've been proud to have had two budgets where in one biennium we had $230 million to support workers who provide direct care to Wisconsinites and over $180 million to increase that direct and personal care rates, including for family caregivers. And obviously the pandemic has made all of this even more complex. And so we were fortunate, frankly, that the federal government stepped up and we were able to make some decisions around that. So we directed over $200 million of our federal pandemic relief funds to those who were caring for our most vulnerable residents. And during such a tough time, including our nursing homes, long-term care providers, and home and community-based service providers. And we also increased by 5% rate increase for home and community-based services using ARPA funds to provide another boost. But now, we have a $7 billion surplus in the state, and we're trying our darndest to convince the legislature to use some of that money to really take this to the next level. My budget proposes $88 million to increase direct care rates for family care, $88 million for personal care rates, and $150 million to make sure that we are in a position to really do the right thing for these folks that need that help. And so I believe we're headed in the right direction, but I can tell you that it's going to take some effort on the parts of the people of Wisconsin. And frankly, I'm hopeful that the people that you share this conversation with, both myself and the next person, to make sure that people get to the legislators and get to the legislators across the state of Wisconsin, not just your hometown people, but we need to have the Joint Finance Committee in particular to understand how important caregiving is and how it's really important that we provide the resources that they deserve.
Yes, thanks, Governor. Our family actually did benefit from your designation of some of those federal funds to increase some of the pay for the people that were supporting Nicole and for us when we were able to support Nicole. So thank you for that part. It's clear that you understand that money is part of what needs to be done here. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the Joint Finance Committee, and we've had quite a few legislators on to talk about this with us and to help us educate people about how to get to them and how to keep telling the stories. But I think you're probably going to have a little bit more of a unique insight that hopefully you can share with us on what is the problem from the Republican side in seeing how this is a bipartisan issue, right? It's a crisis that's impacting everyone. And so do you have something more that we can do than just keep talking to our legislators? Is there a distinct message? Is there an argument to give back to the Republicans or to hear from them on how to make some changes?
Yeah, and that is... I mean, there's a lot of people in the legislature that never have either needed to personally provide care or, have had loved ones in a nursing home or, in that situation. There's not a good way to do it other than to say this is, especially using personal stories. I think it's important and having them understand that that taking care of a family member just doesn't happen. I mean, people just don't show up at your door and say I want to help. A lot of times it's on your own and to making sure that people get it that that it isn't a I don't think that's how I'm trying to put it in the context. It's not a Republican or Democratic issue. It's not whether I'm a Democrat or they're a Republican. It's a priority. Everybody should know, and with the aging population, I can't believe there isn't a legislature who knows of someone in their lives that needs care of a caregiver. And many of them may have that situation at home, but I don't think so. The way that they have responded, they kind of responded the same way last time, but they ended up putting money in the budget. So I do believe that it is a bipartisan effort. It's just that they have other things to worry about, like elections. But at the end of the day, this is about elections, and we want to be on the right side of things because this is an important topic and. People need help, and if it doesn't come from the state government, I'm not sure where it's going to come from. We have the ability to do it. I mean, it's not like we have to go out and borrow money to make this happen.
Well, and I love something that we spoke with our representative, Alex Jours, the other day, and he had said, I love how he put it, that you had set the bar really high taking care of us and what you had put in the budget for caregiver requests. So it's going to be hard for those that are opposed to it to not come close, right, to not put something in there. But one thing that I think is on everybody's mind, whether they're a caregiver or not, is the economy. Right. And so I try to look at this from the big picture. What happens if these are, if these asks are not funded? Well, like we've said, kind of over and over with Kristen's situation, you have a veteran master degree teacher that has now had to leave, out of no other choice to take care of her child. But what are some of the other ripple effects that you can foresee coming if we don't address this crisis?
Well, that's just it, and I think this is a realistic argument. We care about, everybody cares about our economy, but if people are taken out of the economy to take care of a loved one in particular, that's one less person. That's one less person that's providing them. We have the largest number of people working in the state of Wisconsin's history right now. If we don't support situations like this, caregiver, personal caregiving, we don't support that. If we don't support child care, it's another care.
Yep.
Correct? And we will have people leaving the workforce in droves. And that does not help our economy. That is going to make it more and more difficult for us to continue the good economy that we have in the state of Wisconsin. So if it's just about dollars and cents, taking people out of the economy and putting them in a situation where we have fewer and fewer available people to be in our workforce, that's a problem for us as a state.
Right. And we have to acknowledge that these people are the backbone of our state, right? So if the caregivers can't take care of themselves or don't have the resources to take care of themselves, you know, if I fall ill or whatnot, then where does my son go? And a lot of times that involves, you know, seniors, not senior centers, but, you know, more institutions
that end up costing so much more than they realize.
Right. So taking care of me is a fraction of the cost, opposing to having to send my son somewhere on the taxpayer's dime.
Exactly.
Yes. Well,
Governor Evers, we have about just one more minute here. So I'd like to give you an opportunity to just share a final thought on a message you'd like to share with family caregivers, as our audience will be definitely listening to you.
Yeah, well, thanks for the opportunity. Obviously, this is an important part of my budget. If I hadn't, you know, I have a bit of a caregiving background myself. First of all, my father was a physician, and he took care of tuberculosis patients at a health facility in Sheboygan County. Nice. And I was born, we lived on the site. So I had the opportunity to work with people that needed care from a real young age. And then at one point in time in my career, I was, when I was in Madison, I worked as a nurse's aide in a nursing home.
Well, Governor Evers, you get it, right? Yes. I mean, that's so clear. So thank you for that. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Never enough time.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Governor.
Thanks. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a 3-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app. Is your teenager anxious about their future? Would you like to see them take control with confidence and excitement? Contact Sarah Deacon, the adulting coach, at sarahdeacon.com and give them the courage to face their next level in life. Sarah Deacon Coaching helps to process decisions, relationships, rejection, and everything else teenagers go through. And it's a judgment-free zone to learn and express themselves. Visit sarahdeacon.com for your free consultation. That's SARADEACON.com.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly cloudy skies expected today with a high of 78. Southerly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Scattered thunderstorms likely tonight. Lows dip down to about 53. Overcast skies. Overcast tomorrow. Scattered thunderstorms likely. Daytime highs approaching 59. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 61 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with Tammy Jackson, a public policy analyst for the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. If you would like to join the conversation regarding the state budget or what would help you as a family caregiver, give us a call at 1-800-800-8255. 844-967-2789.
So, Tammy, you're really challenging the social studies teacher in the room because I thought I understood how all this worked, and I barely do. And so it's really getting me aware of the fact that the average Joe and Josephina also don't understand what's going on, because I found out driving to the show tonight that we're not even talking about the governor's proposed budget anymore. So can you help me and the listeners understand what we're actually talking about at these listening sessions and what we're trying to actually do with this budget, please?
Sure. You are part of shaping what this end product is going to be right now. The budget process is a multi-month process. And what happened in February is that the governor introduced the first draft of the budget. Oftentimes, except for last session and this session, the legislature will use the governor's budget that has been introduced as their starting point. That didn't happen this time. The legislature has decided to write their own version of the budget, and their starting point from which they will start to make edits to the budget, that's what literally what we're doing, is the budget that passed 2 years ago. Sometimes you'll hear about it as the base budget. So all of the changes that were in the governor's proposal, those aren't part of what passed 2 years ago in the base budget. So anything the governor that was in the governor's budget, still possible, but you have to add it back in.
Okay.
Or there could be new ideas or better ideas or ideas, you know, that aren't, you know, things that are taken away. The editing process is very fluid, and you can be a real part of determining what ends up in that final document.
Okay, so what I need some help with then is, I'm a family caregiver. I would like the legislature to understand some of the things that are challenges for me. It's a great opportunity for me to have a really special relationship with my daughter, but it has caused me financial problems. It's caused me health problems. And most importantly, it's caused me to retire early from being a classroom teacher. So that has got a ripple effect, right? Because now an employer has been impacted as well. So what can I go to the legislature and expect from them, though? I don't know what I don't know, and I don't know what I can ask for as a family caregiver. Can you help me figure out how I would craft my story in a way that is relevant so that I'm not just sitting up there? It's not my style, nor do I think it's effective to sit up there, get a microphone and cry about my story, right? And say, oh, I want you to all feel bad for me, because that's not really their job, and nor is that the purpose of the tax dollars. So what's an effective way for me to use that microphone and my experience?
So you know what? You are halfway there already with just what you said. Let's do a little refining.
Okay.
What you just said is really this beginning of an elevator speech, which you can use anytime, anywhere with anyone, including in a joint finance hearing, but also in an email to your elected officials. An elevator speech is a quick introduction to you that establishes your credibility, your connection to disability and family caregiving issues, and summarizes, you know, what that means to you, right? Mm-hmm. So you say your name, where you live, your connection, and really what you were talking about is the impact family caregiving has had on your life. And I heard you say, I had to leave my job early. I would flesh that out a little bit. I left my job as a social studies teacher, where I was expecting to at least work 5 more years, because I couldn't find anybody else to help me. That is a very tangible thing that the legislator goes, oh, you left the workforce. We have a teacher shortage. We lost a teacher who we could have had for 5 years because there was no other worker to help take care of her daughter.
Correct.
See how that connection works?
Yep.
You also talked about finances and health. Those are three really things we hear about all the time. And all you got to do is flesh that out a little bit. What was the impact on your finances and on your health? And you've got a very concise 3 to 4 sentence story that really tells people a lot of information about why this issue is so important and how it's connected to the bigger problems that Wisconsin's economy has, for example. And, you know, in terms of what you can ask for, there are lots of things that you can ask for. I think one of the things that we're saying is we need fundamental change in how we are calculating what these workers who are absent,
right,
they don't exist.
Exactly.
How we're compensating them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need to be doing something different. How are we making sure that these workers are paid the same as other healthcare workers?
Right.
Right. In the same market, you know, in market wage, right?
Let's back up a second. When you say these workers, who are we talking about?
Direct service professionals, all the people who are coming into folks' homes to help them with activities of daily living, personal care, all the things that keep people independent and out of places like nursing homes, for example.
Right.
These are the workers that no one can find, and exactly, why family caregivers are doing all of those duties.
And you had said before that, oh my gosh, I just lost my train of thought, that the paid care workers, there's a lot of stuff in the budget, in the governor's budget, that helped support the paid workforce. And you're saying now that's all completely gone off the table.
It's not there, but it doesn't mean that the legislature won't add their own ideas. In the last several budgets, they have increased the rate that they pay to providers who employ these workers, and that has trickled down into their wages. And I think we're at a point where those increases aren't solving the crisis. So we need to think differently about it.
Yeah, I would think if anything needs to be done, it has to start with the direct care workforce. We've been talking with Tammy Jackson, a public policy analyst for the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. When we return, we're going to continue to talk about the state budget and the direct impact it has on family caregivers. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 844-967-2789.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
CBS News Brief. The Supreme Court says it's keeping federal rules in place for the use of the abortion drug mifepristone while it considers a court challenge. Politico reporter Alice Miranda Oldstein.
The status quo is still in place for now. So that varies widely across the country. We have such a patchwork right now after the fall of Roe versus Wade.
The Air National Guardsman charged with leaking top secret documents online was officially charged. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
This is not just about taking home documents. That is, of course, itself illegal. But this is about the transmission.
And an explosion at a campaign event in Western Japan. The Japanese prime minister was about to give a speech when the explosion went off. He was ushered off stage unharmed. A suspect has been arrested. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacy Lynn.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weikert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Your home, your property, your decision. At Weikert Realtors Lake Point, we'll guide you every step of the way, whether you're buying or selling a home or exploring commercial property. Your dream is within reach. You'll find our realtors love what they do, and more importantly, we think it's fun helping our clients achieve their goals. Who wouldn't want to do that every day? Give me a call at 608-721-8002. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weikert-lakepoint.com.
Hey, 420 friends, did you know Cheech and Chong was coming into town?
Nah, I'm just kidding.
Knucklehead CBD and vapes are celebrating this 420 season just right. Whether you shop online at knuckleheads.shop, go into their store, or order online for in-store pickup, they are now offering their 420 discount, which is 25% off their delicious Delta 8 and 9 Galaxy edible gummies and their XL brand flower. So shop online at knuckleheads.shop today, or stop on into their Madison and Milwaukee locations,
550 State Street in Madison and 2949 North Oakland Avenue in Milwaukee.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Hi, this is Lindsay Kynard at 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK, The Shaw. Here are upcoming events happening in the area. Come celebrate 414 Day this Friday, April 14th, with various exciting events and activities throughout downtown Milwaukee. Take part in shuffleboard or axe throwing at the North Shore Club at 230 East Pittsburgh Avenue in Walker's Point, which is presented by Bars and Recreation. Love to sing? Well, come sing your heart out at Amped, located at 910 West Juneau Avenue, and take advantage of special 414 Day pricing for karaoke. And finally, don't forget to visit the Milwaukee Admirals this weekend to celebrate our great city at the UW-Milwaukee Panthers Arena, where the Admirals play the Chicago Wolves starting at 7 p.m. If you have an event you'd like us to share, let me know. Email me, Lindsay Kiner, at info@civicmedia.us.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show with Liza Hellenbrand and Kristen Voss. We're talking with Tammy Jackson, a public policy analyst for the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities, about items in the budget that impact family caregivers. And we would love to know what would impact you the most. What changes would you like to see? Give us a call at 1-844-967-2789 to join the conversation. Before commercial, we were talking about the direct care. What do you call the paid caregiver? I know we use a different term.
We call them direct service professionals, or DSPs.
Direct service professionals. Crisis.
We cannot use an acronym.
Yes, exactly. Good. Thank
you. So you had some interesting statistics when it came to the direct care service
professionals.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that and why that would be a great place for us as caregivers to focus?
Well, one of the things that we hear very often from family caregivers is there's nobody to hire.
Exactly.
Right? There's no one to hire. They were already doing a good portion of what needed to be done, because 80% of the care is provided by family caregivers. But that 20% provided by a paid caregiver, that's really big.
Exactly.
And when you don't have anybody to hire for that, that means you're doing it all. And a lot of times that has a ripple effect on your whole life. So there was a survey done across the nation. Our state participated, and it kind of boiled down, okay, what's happening across the landscape? Because our situation in Wisconsin is not unique. Every state in the nation has an extreme shortage of paid caregivers, which we rely on to keep people in their homes and out of nursing homes. And frankly, nursing homes rely on these kinds of workers too, to serve the people who are living in those facilities. And there aren't enough of them. And what we found in Wisconsin is there's a 50% turnover of workers every year. That means every year, half of the folks are new.
Right, exactly. And that's definitely something we saw in our family. I mean, over and over, I've said on the show, and I've said to people, we're lucky that Nicole is able to get all kinds of funding to help us, but we can't find the people to help us or to help her. So like you said, we were 80% of her care. Now we're 99.2%. Like, we've got 4 hours of respite care that we've got this dear, sweet young woman willing to do just because she likes Nicole. Because as you've shared with us here, the average worker wage is $13.53. That's about what Liz is getting too. That is the lowest pay among Midwestern states.
And just to be clear, like the other Midwestern states aren't stars either. So, you know, if you get 50 cents more in Indiana, I don't think that, you know, they have a low retention rate too. And it shows in how many unfilled positions there are at any given time. The Wisconsin data shows that almost 16% of full-time positions and 18% of part-time positions are unfilled. So you have a constant vacancy all the time, as you have this high turnover rate. It's kind of a constant churn and a constant absence of, you know, bodies to do the work.
Well, and not only is the pay incredibly low, most of the time, these employers don't offer health insurance or paid time off or anything to do with the paid caregivers' children as far as child care goes. So what are some solutions?
So I think there are a few. One is it's kind of the trifecta of how do you think differently about how you accurately reflect the pay and build in automatic pay increases for this category of worker. And to me, there's kind of three core elements for that. You know, create a statutory formula that really drives the funding mechanism here. Are you accounting for the cost of inflation? Because costs do rise. And the answer right now is no. But that seems like an important thing to think about. I think a second piece is, are you paying people enough that they can actually live in the areas that they're working? Some people refer to that as a living wage. I think that's pretty important because if your pay rate will not help somebody afford transportation costs or a place to live in the area that they work, then they are going to be looking for a different job that will do that because they have to. Mm-hmm. And I think the third one, and this is super important, is are you paying this group, and I will call them healthcare workers because that's the duties that they're doing. Are you paying them a market wage, which means what are people in the private sector in healthcare facilities who are doing similar kinds of work, what are they being paid? And are they being paid more than the direct service professionals? The answer is yes. So if you have inflation, living wage, market wage, as all the factors that you're using to calculate what should a salary be, I think you get a lot closer to stabilizing and creating positions that people actually want to be in. And I'll say it this way. Taking care of a cash register is not the same as taking care of a person. And yet this workforce can go to a fast food chain and make $4 to $5 an hour more. And we shouldn't ever be making that comparison because these are skilled workers who are doing healthcare work. They're not doing the service that they are doing is fundamentally different from retail. So we got to stop doing the cash, you know, that comparison. Taking care of people, not the same as a cash register.
And wasn't there some proposals out there as, you know, as far as having the paid caregiver workforce, you know, the people that want to become doctors or work in the medical profession, having them have to do a certain amount of time in this paid workforce or, you know, also having the paid care providers being able to earn credits or different things to go towards nursing licensure and things of that sort. Is that something that's being thrown out there as well?
There's a number of things that are really trying to get at that. They call it a career ladder, right? And it's an approach where how do you get people who might be interested in the field in the front door and learning? Maybe you cover their education costs. How do you build in some way for them to be financially rewarded for increasing skills? But the reality is this group of workers, at least as how we fund them now, is completely reliant on a Medicaid rate, which the state legislature sets every 2 years. So there is a lot of interest in trying to figure out how do you reward people for staying longer, for having more skills, for other things, or to maybe get them into a higher healthcare profession ladder. And I think the challenge is, you know, all of that stuff hits the wall if the end pay rate is going to be static, and it's not enough for people to live on.
Exactly. So I think what you've really helped me understand in these last few minutes, Tammy, so let me just recap, is this idea that the state legislator and my fellow taxpayers should care about my crisis by not being able to hire people to help me with Nicole, because there's going to be a point in time where they're going to need a direct service professional, whether it's for themselves, a spouse, a child, or more likely, a aging parent, right? So these folks that we're talking about are professionals. And I love how you're saying they're healthcare professionals. And it is not, I keep, you know, saying this over and over, this is not to diss my son's job at Pasquale's. I love that Andy's a server at Pasquale's. I love that your son is working at
wherever he's working.
Right. Chipotle. I was like, it's another Mexican place. But they are making more than the direct care professionals. And one's in high school and one has just graduated from high school. So where is the incentive for somebody who does want to do the kind of caregiving work and the kind of healthcare work that direct service professionals are doing? Where's the incentive for them to do this when they're not able to even compete with taking care of a cash register, right? From a logical standpoint, you wouldn't go do the lower paid job. But I love how you're saying, so it's not just so much that we want to give them a little bit more right now. We want to create, you said, a statutory formula.
That's what we're, how do we solve the problem permanently?
Right.
Right.
What does that mean, a statutory formula?
It means, how do you calculate how much money the state should be putting in?
Okay.
To support those workers.
Because the majority of this work is being done in public service sectors, right?
Yes. For anybody who's in family care or IRIS, or even if you're in a nursing home, the workers who are caring for those people, they're being paid for primarily out of Medicaid dollars.
Right. And I don't think most people know that until they're facing it. I just had an interesting conversation with a friend at lunch yesterday about her mom being in a memory care unit and not really understanding that, oh, the money's going to run out. So then what are we going to do? Oh, we're going to have to rely on family care. And that's a Medicaid paid program, right? And so therefore, you're not going to get any control over where mom goes, how much mom's workers get paid, so on and so forth, right? It's all going to get dictated by Medicaid. Am I accurate?
Yeah, the Medicaid rate is the Medicaid rate. And I think what you're describing, which I'm, you know, lots of people I know are going through the same experience. Yes, you can private pay, and you will pay at a higher rate than Medicaid offers. But at some point, the money runs out. And most people, frankly, get poor enough to be qualified for Medicaid, because Medicaid is a poverty-based program. And what they find is that a lot of facilities, you know, at least in the nursing home world, they would really prefer to get paid more
right.
than what Medicaid is offering.
Well,
It's unless we stabilize the entire workforce, you really run the risk of there's no place to go.
Exactly.
Like, you can't go home, and there's no place else to go either.
Yep.
And once the money goes out, you know, as a non-private pay individual, you have very few options.
Mm-hmm. And is that one thing that you could go to these hearings and speak about, just the expansion of the Medicaid and the federal dollars? I remember reading something not that long ago that like 75% of rural hospitals are closing. I mean, the Medicaid rates are not high enough, and you can't say no, right, when people go to the hospital.
You know, I think if I were to talk about Medicaid expansion, what that means is allowing people to earn a little bit more and still qualify to get their Medicaid insurance. So instead of being at 100% of the federal poverty level, 138%. I'm going to share a secret with you that isn't really a secret.
Okay.
Most of the Medicaid dollars that are spent on long-term care.
Right.
They are spent on the highest cost people, which mm-hmm. are older adults, people with disabilities, people with complex needs who cannot get their care anywhere else. One, because the private sector doesn't offer it. And two, because maybe they've already private paid and have, you know, spent all of the
they've
money
run out
they
of money.
Have, and right. Medicaid is the place that you end up at the end of that. So, you know, when we think about Medicaid expansion, most of the people who are on Medicaid, the vast majority, that's not where we spend our money. Most of the people on Medicaid are kids and, you know, working families, that kind of stuff. We spend it on a smaller proportion of people, but the people who have the highest needs and the highest costs. And that tends to be older adults and people with disabilities. And so if we expanded Medicaid, took that money and invested in a solid long-term care system, invested in the workers who are going to keep this population as independent and in their homes and out of more expensive Medicaid-funded institutions, because nursing facilities are funded by Medicaid too, I think you'd be doing yourself a grand service as a state, because this is coming for you. Right. This caregiver crisis will hit you.
Right. Exactly. It's going to be a lot, if I'm understanding this correctly, a lot less expensive to pay a direct care worker a living wage to keep somebody in their home than it is going to be to put them in a nursing home or an institution on the taxpayer's dime.
Absolutely. No doubt. That's why we have family care. That's why Governor Thompson actually created the Blue Ribbon Commission, because they saw in 30 years ago that we were on an unsustainable path.
Right.
And everybody voted with their feet. We all want to live in our own homes, not in a nursing home if we can help.
Exactly. We'll be back in just a moment to finish up our conversation with Tammy and how we can keep getting support from our legislators.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Home ownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
Don't settle for big box service and pricing when it comes to your flooring. Choose Straight Edge Flooring for quality and personalized service. A family-owned flooring company, they offer full-service flooring solutions from material to install, including on-site dust-free refinishing. Straight Edge Flooring installers are CFI certified and fully insured, with free in-home consultations to simplify your project. Choose Straight Edge Flooring. Log on straightedgewi.com. That's straightedgewi.com. Or call 414-779-8931 and make your vision a reality.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Weather brought to you by Nextech Glass, your hometown experts for auto, residential, and commercial glass repair and replacement. Please visit nextechglass.com. That's nextechglass.com.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly cloudy skies today with highs around 78. South winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Scattered thunderstorms likely. Lows level off around 53. Overcast skies tomorrow. Scattered thunderstorms likely. Daytime highs approaching 59. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Hite. Currently, it's 61 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza Hellenbrand, and I'm here with my co-host Kristen Voss. And we just wrapped up speaking with Nicole Goebel from CAN and
Caregiver Action Network.
Like how that one wasn't too
well,
difficult.
Because we've had a lot of acronyms running around this last 24 hours.
Yeah, we have had acronym
overload.
Yeah. Which is a real thing. It's
it
a real
is.
Condition.
It is. Yes. Liza, what did you think about tonight's show? You were so excited.
I was so excited. You know, I am happy that Governor Evers took time out of his day to address this issue. I think it just goes to show that it is an issue near and dear to his heart. And, you know, it's just great to know that there's people out there fighting and working for us every day. And on the CAN front, I just love that website. I think there is really everything that you could need to know listed in there. And I didn't know about the advocacy work that they do. And then also what we didn't get to was the fact that they kind of spearhead the National Caregiver Month in November.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's how I found them originally.
Yes.
Right. So you get credit for bringing Governor Evers on.
Yeah.
And I get credit for getting Nicole on. Right.
There you go.
And it's because, and what I got out of the show is it was really nice to hear Governor Evers. Well, it was fun to run around all week and say, we've got, right, you know, an opportunity to talk to the governor. We scored this interview. But I think it was great to hear from him that he has some personal experience.
Right.
And he's really tapped into that this is a statewide bipartisan / nonpartisan issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And really, really thoughtful about how it's bubbling right now. And it's only going to get bigger. And so I do really appreciate the fact that he's got that high bar that we're going to have to expect these legislators to rise to. And so I really like that you brought that up with him.
Well, thank you. And I can, and I like how they are addressing that. Well, I guess they have to, right? From the budget standpoint, kind of why we do this show, to bring awareness to the fact that we're not looking for a pity party. We're not looking for handouts. We're not looking for anyone to feel sorry for us. What we're looking to do is to educate people when they are caregivers so that they can, you know, self-identify and get the help and support that they need. And that this is a crisis. And if we don't address this on some level, the cards are going to fall, right?
I mean, right. It's a community issue.
Right.
Right. And so it is. It's investing. And what I loved when he made the quick aside, it's like childcare, right?
Right.
It's that if we don't invest in the people within our state, our economy is not going to be sustained, because what our economy is a social construct. And so that means it's people. That's right. All it is. And so if you don't have people working and you don't have people shopping, you don't got an economy. And I really appreciate that Governor Evers sees that, and hopefully the legislature will follow and recognize and the people that are talking to them. And they all keep telling us, share personal stories.
Right.
And I'm really blown away by that. I really feel like that means we have to do it, and we have to keep asking our listeners to do it.
We do. And there are a few more listening sessions that are coming up where you can do that. I should have the information in front of me, and I'll have to post it on our Facebook page, the Empowered Caregiver Community, where those remaining listening sessions are.
One is up in Minocqua, and I don't know if that's the last one. I don't remember if the third one is in the Dells or Eau Claire.
The Dells
already happened.
Yeah,
right?
The Dells I actually think was today. But you can still reach out via phone, via mail, show up at the Capitol, send an email, and let them know your caregiving story and why this is important to you and how you're impacted by your role as a caregiver.
Right, and they'll be tracking that, and they'll be able to then say, okay, we have to start addressing this in the budget.
Right. Because if nobody shows up to tell the stories when they're just, you know, when they're deciding where are we going to spend money, well, nobody showed up to say we need money for this. So let's move on to the next thing.
To the many other things that have to be. I mean, we recognize that there's many other things that have to be funded in this state. But this is one that's near and dear to our hearts. And I feel like it truly is an investment. It's a long-term investment.
Exactly. It is an investment. And if we don't, it is going to cost us so much more at the end. It kind of brings me back to the autism days when autism was not covered by insurance. And so kids, young children, toddlers were going untreated. And, you know, early intervention for autism is the key. You know, at least that's what I was told back in the day. And if you don't make gains with these children at a younger age, what is that going to look like when they're adults? You know, you can spend all the money now and get them off to be able to work, to live independently, to pay taxes on their own. Or, you know, you can have them sit for a few years on some wait list and then be paying for them forever.
Forever, exactly. Yeah. So I think it was a really exciting conversation tonight. It really met all of my expectations. And then I loved that we were able to end the evening with Nicole from the Caregiver Action Network and be able to share such a rich resource with our audience.
Yes. And I can't wait also for next week's show. We are going to have a Call for Culture, which is an organization that helps businesses, kind of change and shift to the new age workplace. You know, we got the Gen Zers and the millennials coming up, and they're wanting different things and thinking different things than us old folks, right? And so it really resonated with me because a lot of what Call for Culture is going out and doing really benefits that of the family.